All right, so my name is Drew, and let me show you this. So mainly I wanted to talk about how me and similar people took this conference badge and got Linux to run on it. But I'm going to talk a little bit about FPGAs and RISC-V. So this was the conference badge from a conference back in November in LA called the Hackaday Super Conference. Dave was there, Helen, some other people I think as well. And we wanted to run Linux on it. So I'm going to talk about that and how we did that. And the reason we did it was because we all loved Linux. So before I talk about that, I just want to give a quick overview of what RISC-V is and how that was important to us being able to run Linux on this badge. So has anyone heard of RISC-V before in the room? Okay, cool. So on your computer or on your phone, there's a processor. And the processor has an instruction set, which is basically the rules of what the processor can do. So when you have a program and you compile your program, it's compiled to the instructions that can run on that processor, and that's defined by the instruction set architecture, or ISA. So common ones are x86, which your laptop or desktop probably has a Intel or AMD processor in it, so that's x86. Your phone definitely has an ARM in it. That's another instruction set. Both of those are proprietary, and you can't use them unless you license them from Intel or AMD or ARM. A few years ago, a group of researchers at University of California, Berkeley, developed a free and open source instruction set. So anyone that wants to can take RISC-V and use it to implement their own processor. If you want to learn more about this at Hackaday Super Conference, Dr. Megan Wachs gave a great talk both about RISC-V and FPGAs. I'm just going to talk about it a little briefly here today. So if you want to learn more, definitely check out this talk. I also wrote a column in Hackspace Magazine, which is a really fun magazine if you have not seen it before. It's out of the UK, kind of similar to Make Magazine. So this is the badge here. So the idea with this badge was it was meant to play games. I can show you here real quick. It boots up with these fun little graphics when it starts up, kind of like harkening back to video games. So the idea here was like there was a graphics engine in that you could write C programs that would act as games, so like Tetris and things like that. I quit on accident. So Flappy Bird. So the idea here was that you could play video games on it. And then it also has HDMI, so you could plug it into a monitor and show people the games that you wrote and things like that. So that was fun, but we were interested in running Linux on it. But what was in the badge? So it's not a microcontroller like you might have in an Arduino or an ESP32 or one of those boards. It is actually an FPGA. How many people have heard of FPGA before? Okay, so a lot of you. If you've not before, it's a chip where you have a sea of gates. And we can configure those gates to implement whatever digital logic we're trying to design, including a processor, which is called a soft processor. So instead of having like a piece of silicon that's laid out to act as a processor, we can configure these gates to act as a processor. This chip in particular, from Lattice, it's called the ECP5, and it has 45,000 gates, which is enough for us to configure it to act as a RISC-V processor. Wrote another column about open source tools and FPGAs if you want some more background on this. And actually, many people that go to Chaos Communications Congress have been really key to getting these tools developed. And the tool chain that we're using on the badge here, because we have a FPGA from Lattice called the ECP5, we're using something called Project Trellis. Which a person named Dave Shaw in London helped worked on. And it's also based on tools that a person named Claire Wolf out of Vienna worked on, and a bunch of other people as well. So for several FPGAs now, we have full open source tool chains, which is really cool because when I learned about FPGAs in school a while back, it was all proprietary tools on Windows, really big. They're like several gigabytes to install. Now you can have just a thumbstick that you can have just the tools you need, and it's a small little thing that you can run on Mac, Windows, and Linux and not have to install a big proprietary program. But how exactly do we configure the FPGA to be able to run Linux? So we have open source tools where we can do the equivalent of compiling, which is synthesis. So we take our are designed for the FPGA, and we synthesize it into something that gets loaded onto the FPGA. But how do we actually configure a processor to be able to run Linux? And we use this project called LightX. So this is a project from an engineer in France, Laurent. He goes by Enjoy Digital. And he's a professional designer, and he works on things like cell phone base stations and other projects like that. And through the course of his work, he started publishing some of the modules that he wrote as open source on GitHub. So LightX is a collection of these different processor designs. So things like implementing Ethernet, DRAM controllers, PCI Express. So all the building blocks you need to build a processor. And the cool thing about this, so when I learned about FPGAs, we used a language called Verilog, which is a hardware description language. So instead of a programming language, in Verilog, or another one's called VHDL, you're actually describing the digital circuitry in text. Though those syntax are kind of difficult for people to understand if you've not used them a lot before. So LightX is based on something called MeeGen, and MeeGen is the same sort of thing where we have a hardware description language, but it's in Python. So if you're familiar with Python, which a lot more people I think are familiar with Python than Verilog or VHDL, you can actually get involved in doing processor design just with Python, which is really cool. So we take all these things together, and we can very quickly make a system on chip, an SoC, that goes into the FPGA that has the RISC-V core and like DRAM controller and the other things that we need, like serial controller. So here we have what LightX is. So it pulls in MeeGen, which is basically this Python-based language for doing chip design. And then we can pull in things like DRAM controller, Ethernet controller. We don't have that on the badge. All we have is serial and DRAM. So it's kind of boring, but you might have a higher-end board where you have more of these sorts of things. And specifically, we use this project called Linux on LightX. So this rolls it all together for us. So we have a 32-bit capable RISC-V core that can run Linux, and then it pulls together the other peripherals that we need, like the DRAM controller, serial port. Here's a little screenshot of what it looks like when you boot up a FPGA with this on it and it's running Linux. Actually, I should do that in the background so you can see it running. This was us hacking on the project at SuperCon. We all thought it would be fun to run Linux, so we kind of banged on that for a couple days. Though the badge only has 16 megabytes of memory, which is not quite enough. Though luckily, a person named Jacob actually showed up. He had made a add-in circuit board for the badge before the conference, which allows us to have 32 megabytes of SDRAM, which is actually enough for us to be able to run Linux. This is what it looks like with the cartridge plugged in. The other side is just, all it has is basically a DRAM chip on it, and we can plug that into the badge. The idea here was that you might develop other sorts of expansion cartridges, and then you could trade them and plug them into your badge, kind of like a Game Boy type thing. And then here's, I think this is actually at Exyn. So this is me booting up the badge with Linux on it, which, let's see, in the background, we can maybe do that real quick here. So what we do is I'm connected to the badge through a serial port here, through my FTDI cable. And I use a program called LXTerm, which allows us to go and connect to the badge. Oh, it's very small. So we'll let this run in the background. So it's actually uploading our kernel and then our root file system. So it takes about 2 minutes because it's over serial, which is kind of annoying, but we'll let that run in the background. Where did this go? I think this is where it was. Okay, so. Over here. All right, so after we got back from the conference, we were hacking on one person's laptop, and I was trying to reproduce this. I ordered the circuit board, I built it for myself, and then it was a project of figuring out all the stuff we did to change it. And then I finally figured all of the different files we changed, and I upstreamed it into LightX, which is useful for other people with this badge. If you weren't at the conference, you don't have one. So at the end, I'll show you a couple of boards that you could buy potentially and do something similar with it. But I wanted to give you a flavor for what this MeeGen Python-based syntax for doing chip design looks like. So here's one of the files we had to add, which shows what pins we have on the badge and how they connect up to the pins on the FPGA. Normally, this is the sort of thing you'd write in Verilog. Here, we can just use Python because of MeeGen, which is the framework, and then Lydex is the project that pulls all these different things together. So if you've done any sort of FPGA stuff before, like the syntax kind of looks quite weird. So the nice thing here is just Python, and I think it's a lot more understandable. And for us, we were just able to take an existing board, one from a hackerspace in Croatia, and then copy it and just change the things that were specific to our badge. And the cool thing about Python is it's object-oriented, and we can do things like import the clocks class and import the SDRAM controller. So the code looks much simpler than if you were to look at like corresponding Verilog, in my opinion. And since I think most people probably, chances are they understood Python over these other hardware description languages, I think it's a great way to get people involved in doing FPGAs. Like for example, all we had to do to add the badge to the build system was just define this class here in Python, tell it what we have, which in our case is just serial, though it could be other things like Ethernet or video, and then how we load the gateware, which is like the firmware that we load onto the FPGA. So this is a great way that we can just copy what was there for another board and just change it for the specifics for our case. And also things like we have an SDRAM chip. And normally you'd have to write a bunch of Verilog code to implement the DRAM controller. In this case, we just copy one of the existing classes, put in from the data sheet the specifics to our DRAM chip, things like timings and stuff like that you can find in the data sheet table, and then we're ready to go. However, it was running really slow. It was 300 seconds, which is, no one would love Linux if it took 300 seconds to boot up. So I posted a GitHub issue, and Laurent, I think it was the same day, posted a fix where he got it to run 10 times faster. So now it boots up in 28 seconds. And just to give you a kind of a feeling about how the soft cores run, it's only running at 48 megahertz. Because the problem with having a soft core in an FPGA is you can't run them that fast, maybe 50 megahertz, 100 megahertz. So we're not talking about the same performance you'd have like on an actual processor. And then the other nice thing about being Python is it's much easier for me to look at the diffs. So I was able to kind of understand what he had done to optimize it. In this case, he made the cache wider. So we'd have to go to memory less because we just have an 8-bit memory, which means we have to do a lot of memory accesses. I gave a longer talk at Congress kind of about these subjects, so you can check this out if you're interested in Linux on open hardware and more about open source chip design. So you can't get this badge, it was just for people at the conference, but there's a person named Greg Davil in Australia, and he's developed this really cool board called the Orange Crab, and he's about to launch a crowdfunding campaign for it. So you can pull it up on GitHub, or Greg's also on Twitter. But this is in the Adafruit Feather form factor, same FPGA as is in the badge. And it also runs Linux. And this is the board from the hackerspace in Croatia, the Radeona board, which has a lot of other kind of peripherals on it, good for doing workshops and things like that. And they're about to launch a crowdfunding campaign as well. But one of the, maybe I left it on the table. But there's a great board, which Helen has there, called the FOMU. So this was designed specifically for doing workshops. You start off with MicroPython, you learn how to blink an LED with MicroPython, then you learn how to blink an LED in Verilog, and then finally you learn how to blink an LED using Lydex, which is that Python chip design environment. And it fits in your USB port. So you can go to workshop.fuma.im. It's a self-paced workshop that you go through, and you can order it on CrowdSupply. And then finally, if you're wondering, like, what's the deal with designing hardware, or is that a typo? In Python, a person named Tim, who was the person behind the phone, who gave a great talk at LinuxConf. So that's the URL there for the talk. And he goes more into like, what is MeeGen? Why is it powerful? for example, like Python's a powerful language, it's a productive language, and allows us to do a bunch of Verilog, which is what you normally have to write for doing chip design. And this is an example of what it looks like to blink an LED actually design a chip that can blink an LED. So if you want to know more about MeeGen, you can check out this talk. And that's it.
Yeah. So we're gonna have
just very short technical question. The plus and the exclamation mark, is that like an increment by one, like a plus plus in Python?
Oh, at the end here?
The code you just showed.
Yes.
Equals.
Yeah. So.
Like plus plus just increment.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So. Yeah. Exactly. It's assignment plus one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Add one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you work in, if you were interested in this enough to want to know more, I highly recommend the FOMU. It's the best way, I think, to get started with FPGAs and these open source tools.
That was just a very random notation question.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Offside.
All right.
Yeah, go for it.
So, it's a weird, like, cultural thing. What's the... I've noticed there is, within the maker community, the hacker community, this idea of creating badges specific to a specific congress. What is the benefit in your mind of limiting the availability of the, even being able to have the access to the hardware for people who weren't able to travel or have financial limits where they cannot travel to the conferences?
Yeah.
How does that, for me, I see a disconnect between open source and limiting the access to the hardware.
It's just a production issue. So like this design's open source, but the way it was done is like basically they bought enough to make 300 or 400 or 500. And that was it.
They released
all the files. So the issue here is like if you wanted to build one, you'd have to go source all the components. Yeah. So that's the real issue. And it's like I've done in some conference badges before. And typically you're just working really hard to try and get like however many you need for the conference. And then afterwards, you usually don't have any left over. Sometimes you do. Maybe you sell them on Tindy. But it kind of is. It limits the project because people that weren't at the conference don't have it. And something like this that you could in theory go get it made, but like it would be really expensive to get a couple made, probably. So that is why like I always try and point people to like general dev boards.
Is it the aesthetic of creating the exclusivity, or is it?
No, well, it would be better maybe if we took generally available dev boards and used them as the basis for badges, but I don't know. I think also people want to have some sort of like unique design aspect to it. So if this was just a shield for an Arduino or something like that, that might be better. But I think people usually want to take more creative liberties with it.
Okay. And as a quick aside, I made some pictures and I'd like to tag Xhane.
Yeah.
Are you okay with me?
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think it's also like, you know, I also have questions about badge culture and like add-on culture, and like I used to think about it as kind of quite wasteful, and then I started actually learning more about people that do it, and most of the people that do it they open source their technology.
Yeah.
They are beginners, so actually most people start creating badges as a way of learning about hardware. So if you see them as learning exercises rather than like products, I think that kind of, that's the way I look at them now. It's more like experimental learning.
Absolutely. My question was mostly just to get, okay, where is the...
Yeah.
From someone who exists within that paradigm of like creating badges for the idea of creating badges, is there a disconnect?
To me, the thing that I think this happened with the previous project I was involved in is like you want it to not just be a one-off that people just put in a drawer and never use again. And it's difficult to make a conference badge. It is something people will continue to use. I think Cardio from Camp this year, they did a really good job of like making it something that is useful beyond just the conference, right? And I think that's a really hard thing to do, to design a badge that is like useful like in 6 months or a year or 2 years. Because otherwise we could just have paper badges and maybe like fund more people to come to the conference, you know? There's always a certain amount of money, right? So like we could have scholarships for people to come to the conference instead of spending money on a badge, right? So like there's trade-offs there too, I think. But yeah.
Thank you. So, thanks again, Bruce.